Welcome to this five-part grazing podcast series brought to you by the BC Forage Council and the Peace River Forage Association. This chat is with Dave Semmelink from Lentulus Farm. Originally from South Africa, Dave now calls the Comox Valley home, where he runs a mixed farm. Our discussion ranges from pasture-raised livestock, grazing management progression, whether it is worth or not integrating hogs into a crop rotation, a new chicken mobile, and business diversification into meat processing. Funding for this project has in part been provided by Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada through the Agriculture Climate Solutions Living Labs program. Thanks again, Dave, for taking the time to chat a bit with me about Lentulus Farms. I've looked a little bit at your background, but there seems to be so much to unpack. So maybe, I don't know where you would like to start. I'm sure you get this question often about your farm and just giving a bit of background of how things maybe got started.
For sure. Yeah, I grew up in a farming family in South Africa and moved over to Canada when I was 18. I spent several years trying to get out of farming. So I went to school for conservation and forestry and tried going down that path. But at the end of the day, I kind of went back to my roots and realized all I really wanted to do was farm. So I started off leasing a little farm in the Comox Valley, raising a few hogs, doing a little bit of garlic. I've always run a mixed farm. And I grew that over the years to lease in a couple hundred acres, mostly from Ducks Unlimited down on the island. And I've been raising all the critters. I've been raising pork, lamb, chicken, beef, turkey even. And all of it has been pasture-based. So we basically start with good pasture and we're able to raise healthy animals that way. Yeah, I've dabbled in a little bit of everything from I've been teaching a farm school for the college, for my local college down on the island for a while, to starting my own processing business and abattoir in Kelowna. So we're able to value add our meats and kind of do the entire cycle from breeding animals, which I don't do as much of anymore. We focus more on finishing animals on grass and processing them and then getting them to the end consumer. Yeah, so I do a little bit of everything.
That's a great start. The grazing management seems like where you really honed in on. And maybe you can just share a bit, because I'm sure it didn't start the way you have it set up right now. You probably started and then figured out some things and discovered some things that worked better and some things that maybe you let go of along the way. Can you maybe share a bit about that process, kind of where you started and where you're at right now?
So I started with hogs kind of under the assumption that I would be able to raise them outdoors year round. They would rejuvenate pastures and kind of be an animal that I could use on poor leased land and convert it into good leased land. What I discovered was I have to burn a ton of diesel in order to get those fields back into manageable state after I've ran pigs on them. So what I kind of learned was with our West Coast climate and the amount of rain that we have, there's no way to keep livestock on the lands I'm farming over winter outdoors. So I'm really trying to take advantage of kind of the spring, summer, and fall grazing seasons and then having a place to overwinter my livestock where I can kind of keep them in a barn, build up that manure and turn that into compost and put that back onto fields. So I think the thing I kind of figured out at the beginning, It's great to watch all the YouTube videos and read all the stuff online about raising, you know, rotational grazing and keeping animals outdoors year round, but it doesn't work in every climate. And one just has to be realistic, I think, with one's approach to that management system and raise animals seasonally. Like I can't raise broilers year round on pasture. So I stick to kind of the summer and fall months raising chickens. So we're able to do a really good job. I raise big chickens, so I can get the best value from those chickens. We'll raise them to 8-9 weeks and get a big 6.5 pound chicken, and use our grass growing season to the best of our kind of ability.
So on the pigs, yeah. I guess that's really interesting. We actually have some producers in the Peace region who are similarly, maybe to your idea, trying to use hogs in a rotation to work the land. And I'm curious to see how that might turn out. And I hope I get to talk to them after they've tried it. But obviously, you kind of figured, okay, they do their job, but then there's more work for you to bring it back into something that you can work with.
The problem with pigs on pasture, if you're going to try use that land again for if you're going to take hay or forage off of it and you're going to try run equipment on it, they really take the soil back to a primary state. Like they're going to dig everything up. They're going to create large holes. And I just found on my lands where I want to cut hay on those fields again, it takes a lot of tractor time in order to level the fields again. So I think there's a place for them on ground that's only going to be pastured and you're not going to be running any equipment or over it. And there's definitely ways. So what I do with my pork in the summer is I can move them across a field a little quicker, so they don't create too many big ruts and holes in the field. But using them as a tool to kind of pioneer those bits of ground to eradicate blackberries and all of that. Like they're good at it, but there's still going to be a whole lot of work on top of just running animals through.
How do your cattle fit into your rotation planning?
Yeah, so beef is a relatively new thing for me. We started a few years ago doing beef. What I found with them is, again, we have to overwinter them inside a barn with a dry lot because it just gets way too wet where I farm it to keep them out over winter. But during the grazing season, we've got two galvanized hot lines that we run with a couple gates, and it's really easy for us to move them every day or every 2 days. And that's worked really well over the last few years, moving our cattle frequently across the fields. And I've just seen the growth on that grass without additional fertilizers. I do have beautiful bottomland soils that we graze with the cows. We're able to graze off basically our first cut. We graze it off, whatever we can hit with the cows, and the rest of it we will mow and bale. But yeah, coming back to what they've grazed, we get, you know, 3 to 5 grazings off of a piece of grass in a summer, just relying on rainfall and yeah, good soil and soil moisture and leaving a bit behind when the cows are grazing. Again, I think the area that I rotationally graze with cattle is very unique. Like we have estuary bottomland that grows grass amazingly, but I found there my cattle combined with my sheep, yeah, they've just been healthy. They gain weight and it works really well for us. It's not a lot of labor to move those cows often. Yeah, and we've definitely seen good results in forage growth.
In terms of planning, like for your grazing rotation planning, how do you approach that, especially with all the different species that you're trying to, at some point, I'm sure also intermingle or follow each other?
We definitely could be grazing a lot of animals, but a lot more animals than we are grazing. Like I've got more grass than I need, so we can actually sell hay as well. So I'm trying to build a customer base. I don't want to grow my business too quickly. I want to make sure I've got customers and sales for the meat at the end of the day. I don't want to have a large inventory sitting around with meat. So we're growing slowly as we build a customer base. So that's what we're planning with. We're still way under capacity, so we're able to cut a lot of hay off our fields and still graze a good chunk of them. We're trying to graze over bits of land that aren't as productive for hay, just because it's kind of easier to get animals into some areas where we can't really get hay equipment. So that's the beauty of grazing, is they can cover ground that we can't run equipment on. So we're making use of grass that otherwise wouldn't be used.
And on your grazing regime, are you a daily mover, or how often do you like to move during the fast growing period?
in an ideal world, we're a daily mover, but in reality, we're stretched so thin that it's often 2 to 3 days that we're moving. And for sure, the areas that we move faster, we see way better results. But the reality of it is sometimes we just don't have the time to move animals every single day, which I think is a big kind of mistake, and we should try make the time to do it. Trying to make a living from farming is bloody hard, and there's only so much more that we can charge for the product that we raise. So it makes it tricky to add those moves in. Like right now, we were moving our sheep on one of the fields every 2 days. It was going really well, but we've grazed that field off. It needs another 3 weeks of recovery before we can put any more animals back onto it. So we've moved the flock over to a field that they're going to be on for 10 days, and we're not going to move them. So we have areas that we can move animals quickly across, which is just set up. You know, mostly those fields are square, they're easy to fence, they're easy to move temporary fences on. And then there's fields that are really tricky to move fencing on. It's easier for us just to stick them in there for 10 days and then come back to the fields that we can move them quickly on. So I'd say we're in a transition to moving our livestock more frequently, but we're also trying to be realistic about it and realizing that we can't do everything in a day. Sometimes we have to make small compromises in order to actually still make a living from farming.
Yeah, I really appreciate you sharing that in terms of, here's what I would like to do, but here's what I can do with the resources I have, while also still having a bottom line that I can live with, right? For your cattle and sheep, do you keep them separate, or do you have them like follow each other, or, you know, do they have their own rotation?
Right now they have their own rotation. They're on different farms, actually. But I have followed them in the past, and that is something I would like to do more of. I know it works really well. The times that we have done it, it's worked great. I haven't mixed them. I haven't tried doing the flirt system. but I've seen it work. And I know grazing them after each other has worked really well for us, because they do graze different kind of levels of grass. So we will try to get back to that. But the system that I have right now, they just happen to be on different farms. I think that's a big part of my business structure, is leasing land and not owning land. And that kind of makes, you know, I'm on four different parcels and two different regional districts. So it's a pretty unique situation that I have, where we really do have to, we're spread thin over a lot of farms, mm-hmm. Or a lot of area. And yeah, it's compromises and figuring out how to live with them.
For leasing land, do you find it adds a bit of uncertainty in terms of how long you might have the land, or if the leaseholder all of a sudden says, oh, I need the land back, or I'd like to do something else with it?
For sure. A leasing land is really tricky. And again, I'm in a very good situation where leasing most of my land from Ducks Unlimited on 20-year leases. was very secure leases, and then taking advantage of different government programs that help with fencing and cross fencing so that I'm not bearing the full expense of those projects. Being able to access money from the Ministry of Agriculture's EFP planning, like that's helped me put in a lot of cross fencing for the sheep and the beef. Without that funding, there's no way I would have been doing that on leased land. I can't pay it back in, 5-10 years. Yeah, having access to a bit of funding to help with that makes all the difference. Yeah, I was actually just successful in getting a grant, the new rotational grazing grant that there's funding for, to get a robotic chicken barn for my farm up in Kelowna. Mm-hmm. And that's basically a barn that is solar powered that goes out in a field and moves a few inches every hour so that chickens are on fresh grass constantly. There has been a delay in production, so we're still waiting on the thing to arrive. But it's looking really promising, and I think will add a lot to the business to have everything kind of it kind of taking the best of both worlds, where you're looking at the automation of big commercial barn systems and you're putting that onto a pasture-based system so that it's not as labor intensive. Because coming back to moving animals every day, it's so hard to do that and actually make a living doing it and pay yourself to move those animals or pay staff to move things every day. So having this automated barn that can go out, it can be predator, protected. It basically needs servicing once a week, where you fill up the water tanks and the feed tanks, and everything else is automatic and solar powered. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to trying that system out with my chicken, because moving them all the time is a pain in the ass. And
so is it like an oversized mobile chicken tractor? Would I have to imagine it like that?
Exactly. It's basically a chicken tractor that's the size of, it's 30 feet by 30 feet. So you can do 550 broilers at a time in it. So that's a decent amount of chickens to do in a go. We can actually make a bit of money on these batches of chicken. But again, this definitely would not have been feasible without the grant paying. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it covered $20,000 of the $45,000 that the unit costs. I could not have made that work if I'd had to pay the full price. But paying off $5,000 a year towards infrastructure, hell of a lot better than paying $10,000 a year to that infrastructure, where we can raise up to 2,000 or more chickens in that system.
Yeah, that sounds like a really neat project. And you say it moves how fast?
We can set it to whatever we want. So depending on the grass, the growth, that's the age of the birds, because you can't really with rotational grazing, there's so many factors. You can't just say, okay, well, my cows get a quarter of an acre every single day. That quarter of an acre changes across, a 40-acre field. There's going to be areas that are growing quite differently, and the animals are going to be a different size. And so that's the beauty of this robotic mobile coop. We can just program it to the size of the chickens, the weather conditions, all those different factors can be put into the program, and we can really maximize the grass.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. Maximize the grass and also labor input, like you mentioned, that would be a huge benefit for sure.
That's the big one. Like, that's what it always comes back down to. Like, we're, mega industrial scale farming has got to the point where they need so little labor to raise so much meat. And I think that's usually the factor that separates the two styles of farming, is we're such a labor-intensive farming system, and it just makes it so hard, especially these days, trying to find help on the farm and pay decent wages. Like, I really believe in paying decent wages. Like, my farm workers start at $25 an hour because they need to live. Like, I can't pay people minimum wage and expect them to have a life. So that's extremely important to me. So being able to pay people decently and not put too much labor into these systems makes.
Do you spend a lot of time on your cost of production? Kind of how do you fit that into your planning and all the other things you got to do?
Yeah, no, I do. I spend a lot of time, and we cut things when expenses are getting too high. Like right now, we've got very little beef on the go because it was too expensive for us to raise them, and the margins weren't there. So, and same with pork, we're way down on pork numbers this year because of feed costs and several other factors. But we're going to do more chicken this year because we're expecting the arrival of this. Barn 4 months ago, but supposedly it will be here in a few weeks, and can only hope. Yeah, so we're planning to do a hell of a lot more chicken this year because our labor costs are hopefully going to come down dramatically on that one. And then I've partnered with somebody else this year with my sheep enterprise so that we can expand that, do more, and we'll be using less labor on a bigger flock of sheep because we're kind of using both of our resources to make everything more efficient. So that's something I really look on to is building partnerships wherever I can to make things more efficient.
Now, you mentioned you also set up an abattoir to process your animals. Did that kind of arise out of the need that you didn't have space, like abattoir space that you could book?
Exactly. Like I chose where I was going to farm knowing that there was an abattoir there and it did have good capacity. It's probably I think it is the largest abattoir on Vancouver Island, and they're great. They're awesome to work with. They always try to fit me in where they can, but they can't do everything that I would like done. And I did have to book animals, 8 months in advance to get anything in, which across BC, that's kind of the norm is booking nearly a year in advance for your animals. And I found that really hard being, I'm essentially a new entrant into farming in British Columbia, and livestock farming is not what I grew up doing. I grew up with my dad running apple orchards and vineyards in South Africa, so very different to livestock and hay production. So I'm still learning and teaching myself things and, getting as much knowledge as I can from other farmers. So I'm not as good at specializing in just one thing. I'm trying to do so much that it is tough to figure out those exact butcher dates when my beef is going to be at exactly the right stage to butcher, especially grass finishing animals. It makes it a little trickier. So that was a big factor in getting the abattoir established and going. And then just with the quantity of animals that we do, it just kind of made sense to get one started up. And I came across a lease opportunity on a farm in Kelowna with an existing small abattoir that I could upgrade. Another really good opportunity where, it came with a 10-year lease with an option to extend. It already had a small customer base for lamb and chicken. And we're expanding. I'm actually hoping to get hogs approved next week and beef approved in September for this plant, so that we are able to do everything. We can run a small custom process in business as well, so I can keep a few employees busy year round in this facility. And then we can really do what I want to do with my product and strive for that super, super high quality end product is what we're trying to go for. Yeah. And have it available whenever I need it available, so that we can service restaurants, we can service, end consumers year round. Having a bit more control over the process inside has been a huge help in expanding my business.
For sure. And you mentioned about being able to have staff year-round in your abattoir. And I've heard that before from another region where that was a struggle, you know, to or they had to be certain times that had to be filled up because it was a bit low on processing. But because you have your own, you can kind of manage that a bit better.
Exactly. So we're able to, and this is something I learned from the processing facility on the island. They're really good friends of mine. And they were like, well, they've got a farm as well, so they can finish beef and lamb and fill in the gaps with their abattoir when things are slow. Like everybody wants to get their animals processed in September, October, mm-hmm. which, you know, they just isn't the room and the capacity. No business can only survive with 2 months of work. Like how, you know, you have to spread it out over the entire year, which so I can at least move my animals to the quieter months. But also being able, I'm one of the very few poultry and red meat facilities in the province. Mm-hmm. That helps a lot as well. Like poultry, we seem to be doing in the spring, summer, when there isn't too much work on the red meat side. So we are able to fill in those gaps a little better than some other plants. But yeah, it's again, it's really important to me to have a well-paid crew who can work year-round and, yeah, make a good living doing what they're doing.
For sure. And how is it to find labor? Or is that one of your challenges?
It's definitely a challenge, but again, I prefer to make less money myself and pay my work as well. And I think that's definitely helped me attract in quality workers. I have two amazing full-time workers at the moment in my plant, and we've got three part-time helpers. And again, I'm paying well above industry average, but living in Kelowna is bloody expensive, so the only way to kind of make it work is paying them well. And I find that the margins, because I'm leasing a facility and I don't own the actual land, I'm not making massive monthly mortgage payments. I'm making smaller lease payments, and I'm able to invest more money in equipment and other things to make things more efficient. So I found that that's a good business model for myself, other than I have to lend money for a lot more than folks that do own land. Bank likes to charge me lots, but it's great. The fact that I'm able to access capital to build the business is, you know, I'm extremely grateful to Farm Credit Canada for believing in my business and basically lending me money on a business plan. Like it's kind of amazing that they are able to do that for me.
And I think at the same time, yes, it is expensive to be in Kelowna, but it's probably also a really good strategic location to be as your with your abattoir.
It definitely is. There's, you know, people, I've had lambs brought to me from Vanderhoof. It's a 7-hour drive or 700 kilometer drive. It's also a good location for me to be selling meat from. It's a lot easier than the island in many respects. One, I've got a bigger population center in Kelowna to move meat. Two, shipping meat to Vancouver, it's cheaper for me to ship meat to Vancouver from Kelowna than it is from the Comox Valley because of the cost of the ferries. So it's a good location for me to be selling meat from, and there's a lot of custom work kind of around me that's making it all possible.
Excellent. And what do you see in the future? Like, yeah, you mentioned you're patiently waiting on your mobile chicken house.
Yeah. But, yeah. So I do see myself probably expand, like looking for more ways to make rotational grazing more efficient. And I think looking at technology is definitely the answer for my situation. You know, we struggle to the farming side of things. It's a lot harder to justify paying labor as well as I do, because the margins are a hell of a lot smaller on the farming side than on the processing side. So I need to find ways to kind of make it more cost effective to run these systems. So things like this, I'm really looking forward to trying out this chicken tractor and seeing if it is going to be the game changer that I think it is. I think with investing a bit of money into the technology side of things, we should be able to kind of, see the best of both worlds, where we have the efficiency of conventional agriculture and the benefits of regenerative agriculture by moving, having the system move over grass, build our soils, and raise healthy livestock. I'm hoping that there's other advances to help us a bit more with beef and lamb. And I think there are different fencing systems that I've seen around that are making it a lot faster and easier to set up fence and move temporary fences. I think that's a big one. Having advances in that simple technology is going to be huge.
What about watering? Is that one of your time-consuming aspects as well? I know water always seems to be a limiting factor.
Yeah, so we're only really set up for irrigating on one of our farms on the island, and that takes so much time. It's at least an hour a day for somebody on a tractor to move our water gun and set it up and get things irrigated. And it's, again, the cost of doing that is huge. But having that security to be able to put water onto fields and not have to buy in more feed when, it doesn't rain is huge. Drought is probably and weather variability is the toughest challenge that I face. It's trying to create security with changing climates is, I think, probably the most important investment that we need to make. Because trying to farm is basically farming. You have a factory without a roof, and it's bloody hard. So, figuring out solutions to, building dugouts on farms and storing water and investing money in irrigation systems are, I think, going to be critical in the future in raising livestock.
What about your livestock watering system? Is that fairly intensive to move, or do you have a pretty good system
going? Oh yeah, so my system, for watering livestock, it's not fantastic, but it works. I use a lot of half-inch poly and float valves, which is relatively cheap. You can run, we've got several thousand feet of half-inch poly that doesn't cost very much, and it's just slow trickle. Most of it's gravity-fed water for our livestock, and it fills up waters fast enough, and animals always have water. And that's trying to spend a little bit of money on putting in the infrastructure, like this poly line, to get water close to animals all the time is definitely necessary. We do have other, movable tanks and things that. Yeah, it's tricky, but animals need water, so you have to figure out a way to do it. And I think it's unique to every field that we graze. We've got different systems, be it tanks on the back of a truck or, 1,000 liter tote of water on top of a stack of pallets in a field for some sheep where we can't get a poly line to. We've got multiple different methods of getting water to animals.
You mentioned that, you came from a very different farming background. Do you think maybe that's actually an advantage, that you didn't have a whole bunch of preconceived notions of livestock production when you got started?
Definitely. I think that is one of the best things I've got going for me, is that I still think that I need, I'm always interested in other people's ways of doing things, and I feel like I don't know enough, and I always need to learn more from other people. And I think that's definitely been extremely helpful in the business, just being somebody that's always curious and always wants to learn from other people and always willing to try other things. I think that is a critical trait to have with this type of farming. Like, that's every situation is unique, every piece of ground is unique, every field is unique, every different livestock species. So being able to just look at other people's systems, take the best ideas and try fit them to your farm is critical.
And sometimes the best way to learn is to teach. And it sounds like you are teaching a little bit, you mentioned.
Yeah, no, I've always really enjoyed teaching. From back when I was working in forestry, I ran tree planting crews and did training for new planters. And later on, I trained foremen and things. And then I got into, teaching farming just kind of randomly. The college asked me if they could use my farm as a teaching site. And then, asked me to teach a program and develop a program. And it's helped me a lot too, because you go back to the basics, things that you kind of know as a farmer, but you also, you might gloss over bits and pieces, and getting all the questions from new entrants is always really, for me, it's my favorite part of teaching is the questions from new entrants that I don't think of myself. Like, you just like, oh, this is the way I always do things. Well, that's a really good way of looking at things. Why don't I do things that way? And then talking about it and, looking at new ideas, and ideas from people that don't come from farming backgrounds they can be interesting. Definitely not always right, but but there's always something to learn from everybody. And it's been great kind of going down the teaching route as well, and helping people kind of get started, and just giving people a little bit of confidence, saying, you don't have to know everything. Farming is all about learning as you go, and just improving from year to year. The job's never done. There's always going to be more. And why not learn more and just be better?
Yeah, and I think kudos to you to share your experience as somebody who's also still describing himself as a new entrant, right? Because oftentimes people feel they have to know so much to be able to be in a teaching role, but actually sharing that early stage is fascinating too.
Exactly. And I feel like, I've been doing this for 10 plus years now, but at the same time, I still feel like everything's relatively new. And to be able to kind of talk through those growing pains and how to get started, we're struggling to find new farmers in BC. There's always those stats going around being most farmers are about to retire any day now. So trying to find a new group of farmers to come in. They farm kids generally don't want to farm. Like I'm the only one of five children that wanted to farm, and I didn't want to farm for several years after high school or growing up. That wasn't my plan. I think farm kids generally know that it's a really hard life. And there's a lot of benefits obviously to farming as a career, but it's not the easiest way to make a living. I don't think you get into farming for an easy living. It's a tough job, but it's something you do if you love. And I think there's a lot of opportunity for new folks to get into farming now. What the young agrarians are doing with helping their land matching program and finding leased farmland for people. I think there's a lot more land available for people looking for leases and opportunities to learn than there are people looking, which is kind of amazing. Like it's, people were like, they were saying that the hardest thing to do is access to land. But at this point, I think it's finding good fits for land. That's the hardest problem. Like not everybody that wants to farm is actually going to be a good match for those bits. Like it's still a hard job, and giving people a little bit of a taste of it, be it a short farm school program, so hopefully they don't just quit after a couple of years. I feel like it's really important to teach the lessons of, not everything's going to be a success. There's going to be failures. You have to build resilience into your farm planning. And hopefully just stick it out and make it all work.
Yeah, great lessons for sure. If people are interested in learning a bit more from you, or maybe make use of some of your services that you're providing, where would you send them?
For sure, they could check out my website and contact me via email. It's lentilusfarms.com. Find my email address, shoot me an email, and if I don't get back to you, probably send me another one a few days later because I get way too many emails and miss them all the time. No, I'm always happy to kind of share my experiences and learn with other people as well.
I really appreciate you taking the time and sharing some of your thoughts. It's just people like you that we need to like just share, because I think it's so valuable to have a peer-to-peer learning opportunity.
Definitely. Thank you. No, thanks for having me. And yeah, no, it's great to just kind of sit back and kind of think about, yeah, my business from a different perspective as well. And yeah, give back a little bit of that I can.
If you enjoyed this chat, check out the other episodes in this brief 5-part grazing series. Also visit bcforagecouncil.ca and peaceforage.bc.ca for more great information on regionally relevant forage and pasture management tips. Funding for this project has in part been provided by Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada through the Agriculture Climate Solutions Living Labs program.